Wow.
What's up?
I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
The new year is here, and it's the perfect time to kickstart your meditation practice. The Morning Meditation for Women podcast has short, daily guided meditations that will help you start your day with intention and focus, and make it so easy to get you into the habit. Imagine feeling so much more calm and confident in 2025. Follow and listen to Morning Meditation for Women on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
So a former DG asks, and has texted Phoebe pictures of my new Jeep, and she's really sad.
You have the cool one?
No, just...
Oh, it's just that yours is gone. I got you.
Yeah, because it was hers for a couple years.
I got you.
And like I said, you know, I've had it since, well, how old was she? She was 8 when I got it, so...
Yeah. Yeah. It was great. I just got to see it for the first time. It's sweet.
It's nice.
It's really good looking car. And it, you're right. It's almost the same color as the old
one. Yeah. Makes the transition a little easier.
I think so. But as I was telling, like, I know I joked with you about it, but like, you'll miss the old car. But after time, you're going to be like, man, I don't miss that. Like the keyless start and the. You have the heating seats or no?
Yeah.
See, you're going from no windows to heated seats.
I know. Your radio's going to work.
Yes. It does.
Whoa. Your radio's work. It's digital. You've got a nice display. You got the backup camera.
No, I was.
And it's bigger. It's got a lot more space in the back.
I was driving in with doors and windows, listening to the radio, which I haven't in 3 years, and heated seats.
Yeah. So again, I think the more you do it, the more you're going to be like, this is the best thing I ever did.
Mm.
Because every day is going to be better. It's going to be more comfortable. It's going to be whatever temperature you want it to be. It looks better. It feels better. Like, you know, you miss the old thing for a bit. But when it comes to a thing like a car, the newer car, you always end up at a point where you're like, man, how did I live without all this stuff?
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, it's funny hearing you describe like the things that are luxuries about the car versus the things that aren't. You're like, it's got heated seats and a heated steering wheel. We're like, wow.
Dude,
you're like, it's got a window. And it's got doors. And it's got a radio. We're like, well.
It's absolutely true. Everyone out there is like, who's this insane person? How poor is Dave?
Never had a car with a window.
Yeah.
You can actually lock your car now.
Yeah. Yeah, what a farce that was. One skinny thief could just crawl in there and go. One more thing on the fires, unrelated to the fires. Have you seen where the guy was interviewing Steve Guttenberg from Police Academy?
I saw the picture of it.
And he's like, what's your name, sir? And Steve Guttenberg is a pretty big star from my era.
Yeah.
But I loved the way he handled it. I should have sent you the sound. He was just like, my name's Steve Guttenberg, and I just want to help. And it's like, it's so refreshing.
That he didn't get insulted?
He's like, Steve Guttenberg, maybe you've seen Police Academy 4?
You know, it's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8.
It was just so nice to see a fairly famous person act like a normal person.
Yeah.
That was nice.
It was.
Yeah, but at the same time, like, the bar is on the floor if our reaction to someone just being normal and humble
true.
Is like, what a great guy.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Because most of them would have been
time to
the reporter.
I would say.
Do you think that's where the bar kind of is for celebrities?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so. Because even, like, people will be, like, an influencer and show up places and be like, do you know who I am? I have 150,000 Instagram followers. Like, it's just ridiculous.
I mean, you, like, subconsciously, you expressed, like, borderline surprise. Like, oh, Steve Guttenberg was nice. How about that?
Yeah.
Do you think it's the, not generation, but just the fact that he probably is aware that he hasn't been in the public eye for probably 20 years.
I don't know.
Versus somebody who's like in their moment now.
My gut is he's just a nice guy.
Okay.
Yeah, my brother has worked with Steve Guttenberg actually on something, and he says he's very nice.
That's cool.
He seems so.
Yeah, super, super good guy. Not everybody on the production was so nice, but he was very nice.
Name the other ones.
Yeah, what is your brother's overall? Are Hollywood people very difficult?
Yeah, I think in general he finds them pretty, like, in his experience they've been pretty difficult. He hasn't worked with a lot of, like, you know, big,
do you think
giant
we
names.
Would become difficult if we became that famous and rich?
Dave, look at how many difficult radio personalities there are.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, I think it's just kind of a part of what happens, and then I think some people snap out of it. Or they were never going to get to that place because they're just like a good person. But I think there's something about when everyone's telling you how great you are, you start to believe it. And then there are plenty of people who just don't have those guardrails of like, all right, this is getting to be a little much. I'm going to kind of humble myself here. There are plenty of people who are just willing to eat it up for as long as
and
it
you often have. You often have like a legion of servants. You know, you might have one or two like personal assistants of your own, and then you've got like production assistants on a you know, if you're shooting a movie or whatever, and their entire job is just kind of to cater to whatever it is that you want. You don't have to keep track of time because their job is to go to the trailer and make sure that you're ready to go.
I guess it comes down to a lot how you define yourself. That if you define yourself by your fame, or if you define yourself by your wealth, then you're very protective of it.
Yeah, I don't have a lot of, I have a little bit, but very little with the entertainment industry, but I have a ton of experience in sports with this. And it's the same idea. You have the wide range of personalities, and some guys are, you know, so I haven't covered women's sports. So I've covered Major League Baseball, the NFL, NHL. You'll have people in there that are just idiots, and you're like, why are you this way? And others are just, they could be your next door neighbor. They're just normal, even though they're rich and famous. They don't care. And I think we have the same percentage of, as Ronj would call them, dinguses in regular jobs, in regular workplaces. I've worked in places like where there's a person, you're like, why are you such an ass? Why are you short with everyone? Why are you such a jerk? Why do you expect everyone to do everything for you? And I just think that they all exist in all forms, but everything, the more wealthy you get and the more you have around you, the more it's amplified, because it can be, right? You're visible. You've got more people around you that are assisting you because you can't do everything. And the more that goes up, it just amplifies the buttholery that was already there.
Good word.
You like that? I've been working on that.
Don't you feel, though, and maybe I've just seen too many movies, but I would think that if that's where you put your value, that you're one day going to be very disappointed and very unhappy.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's why a lot of them seem to kind of end up there.
I've seen that so much in sports, just so much. You know, when you look at a locker room full of players, there are going to always be a few, and you're like, what is wrong with you? Why are you that way? There's no reason to be that way. And then you look at others, you're like, why are you so nice? Like, why are you so far the other direction? Mm. And I think that's just, their workplace is not much different than any other.
Should we, like Rach said, that I was so impressed with Steve Guttenberg not going off on the guy for not knowing who he was, should we expect less from celebrities?
Maybe I would phrase it differently. I would say maybe we should, well, I don't know. Expect is a hard word I'm trying to figure out, because I think we should expect people to try to be better in general. But I also think that I would expect all people to not be that way, and some people are that way. I mean, people get hot for nothing, get angry for nothing. Think about how many road ragers where they'll just start cutting people off for no reason. You know, I mean, like, there are people doing those things. So I guess maybe we should just lower our expectations of people in general, and then it would be applied to everybody across the board.
Mm. Completely different topic. You had one of my Dave thoughts last night. I wrote down, is it true that you only know what someone teaches you? Like, I was just thinking about the knowledge I have, whatever wisdom with a lowercase w I have. Did I necessarily learn that from someone, or do you pick things up on your own that are important or born with things?
I think you would have to pick things up on your own. Otherwise, society would never progress because we would just be learning the same things over and over.
Good point.
It's definitely
right? That's a great point, because, like, I've always thought of, like, people who get PhDs, that your job, correct me if I'm wrong, is to be taught everything the current PhDs know about the Civil War. And then your job during your career is to advance that ball a couple of yards down the field, add something to Gettysburg that we didn't know about. So, again, it's a good point, Rich, that you have to surpass your teachers so that your students can surpass you.
Yeah.
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 So I think it's, you know, it's not a direct quote that I want to apply to anyone, but I've heard, you know, and read about scientists talking about this. Essentially, you're just standing on the shoulders of the people that came before you, but your job is not just to learn what they learned, but to advance it and to learn new things. And it's both, right? You have to learn from other people, but there are also things you just learn by doing and experiencing success or failure. You know, you just do them on your own. But think about all the things as a kid that you just tried. Can I climb that tree? Can I do this? And you figure out how. Nobody taught me how to climb a tree. I just like, well, I grab onto that. I try this. Oh, damn, fell. Got to do that a different way. And I think that there's a little bit of both wired into us, just depending on, I guess, where you what thing you're talking about. You know, an advanced scientific topic or just climbing a tree. It's going to be a slightly different thing. But, yeah, you've got to have both. Don't you have to have some innovation of your own?
Mm. How much of a measure of a successful life do you think that is? In your way, given who you are and what you do, moving the ball down the field, how much would you measure your success when you get to be an age where you're no longer actively doing that?
Well, I mean, yeah, you guys are going to hate me. This is a very Wheeler answer. But my definition of whether or not I'm success or failure is whether or not I'm happy with what I'm doing. So if I've done what I wanted to do, then it was a success. You know, when I set my goals coming out of high school, one of the things I set my goals for was I want to do a job that I enjoy doing every day, that I want to have fun doing it.
Granted.
And that, to me, that's a success if I'm doing
it. But how important is it to you, maybe not at all, that when you're done with this career, that someone says, you know, before Kevin Wheeler, they used to do this, but then after his career, we learned how to do it a different, better way?
Oh, I don't know. I wouldn't view that. To say I don't care is not really, it's a little bit extreme, but it's not something I think about.
Rage?
Yeah, I feel the same as Wheels. I guess I just don't have, I just don't think that everyone is capable of reaching that level. And I don't think it makes you a failure if you don't reach that level.
Good
like,
point.
Not everyone can be a pioneer. Not everyone can be a trailblazer. Not everyone can be like the thing everyone's looking to, because if everyone could reach that status, it wouldn't
We'd
be
have
special.
Flying cars.
Yeah. I mean, I think all of us have the capability, given certain breaks at different times in life, right? Because some of it's things that we can't control. But, you know, we have a will, and sometimes you don't want to.
It's a great question, though.
And it's okay to not want to.
What percentage of us are special? As opposed to, and I'm not saying like you're worthless if you don't.
No, I know what you mean.
Add a new element to the periodic table. But I mean, what percentage of us do advance the ball? It's an interesting question. 1%? 10%?
Yeah. Well, there are two, I think there are two kinds of people that advance the things that we're talking about, like pushing it forward. There are the people that were born genetically with gifts, right? So I wasn't born 7 feet tall like Shaquille O'Neal. Right. There are people that are born with certain physical advantages. And then there are people whose brains develop in a different way. Some of it's genetic. And you can't fight genetics. So if someone has that extra smart, or they just see things a certain way. Right. Think about the difference in how the greatest artists of all time view the world and experience the world compared to someone like Oppenheimer. Like, it's just a different mind. It's a different way of the mind functioning. But it's still the same kind of genius. It's still the same, you know, pushing the envelope on something. So there's that. But then there's the other group of people that they make things happen through sheer force of will and effort, you know. So I don't know that it's one way. But
do you believe that everyone has a gift, or you think that's just happy talk?
No, I think everybody does.
Do you?
Yeah. It just depends on, A, whether that gift is something that other people value enough to pay you for it, and B, whether or not you develop it or even discover it yourself. Again, and some of that may be on you, like, but some of it may not be your fault.
What
some
if Jimmy Griffin never picked up a guitar?
Right.
He still has the talent.
Right. He would still have the same genetics, the same body, the same mind, same everything. But, you know, those things are not, I don't think those things are very easily defined. You know, we say in sports, we talk about a lot, he was born to be this, or to a degree, but you still have to refine it. You still have to work at it. You still have to put in the time. Nobody's just born able to hit a baseball 500 feet. You have to train to do that. Now, you may be born with the physical characteristics that will allow you. You're born with the building blocks. Maybe you are born with a brain that is capable of doing things with numbers that other people don't do as well. You still have to put in the time and perfect it and work it and build it. So it is as much of outside influences and things like what resources are available to you. Where did you go to school? How good were your teachers? How good were your parents at pushing you to do something versus pushing you too far on things? There are so many things that come into it.
Kevin's so smart.
I don't know
like,
about that.
No, you are. Like your brain, I always, like, your brain's like a computer, and my brain's like a kaleidoscope. Like, you're so A to B to C, which is...
I get what you mean.
I'm A to J to 7. And it's just interesting spending four hours a day with you because, like, I'm...
But it's kind of what we're talking about, right? Like, our brains work differently, but they get us to a point where we're doing the same thing for a living.
Yeah, true.
You know, and I think that, you know, I know a lot of my experiences. Like, so when I think of all of these things, it doesn't matter if it's science or art or sports. I experienced it in sports, but the principles apply anywhere. You know, there are so many. You have raw materials, and what are you able to do with it through effort and through circumstance? You know, if you're born with all these great talents, but you're in a place where your parents have a drug problem and you're not getting the attention, you're not getting the opportunity to make the most out of your born gifts, your intelligence, your size, your strength, your speed, you are now less likely to do it, and it's through no fault of your own. And it could also be the opposite. It could be that you have middling physical abilities, but you have all the opportunities and training in the world, and you make the most of that because
of it. It's interesting that we even have this concept of success and being special. Like, you can imagine just if society, and maybe at some point it was like this, that you're just, no one's even thinking that. You just
do things.
You just do things.
Let's
go.
It probably was like that
initially.
Let's
go kill a couple bison. But if Blowbor kills three, you don't go like, wow, that's it. You're just like, okay, I don't care.
That's good for all of us.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I don't know exactly how it ran back then, but it certainly would have had to be a lot simpler than it is now.
Yeah, we'd be living a lot different lives today if you didn't have the Teslas and the Einsteins.
But who knows? Maybe back then, if Blowbor was the best killer and he hurt someone, they'd be like, yeah, no punishment for Blowbor because he's getting us bison to eat. I have no idea. Seems like in our nature, though, right?
Yeah. Just a couple of minutes here in this segment. Can you read that tweet? That's pretty interesting.
Yeah, that's interesting. So I follow an NFL writer named Mike Silver. I think he does a good job. But he's had some back and forth with some fans over coverage of NFL teams. And this random tweeter just put this out there. I think it's smart. He said, it's wild that people like me that do all kinds of things, like do all kinds of random jobs and screw around on the internet, feel like we have the first clue what goes on inside these organizations over the people that actually draw a check covering their field. And I think we're all that way. This is not to point fingers at anyone. I think we all do that. We all, like, I did it earlier today talking about people running the city. I don't know what's actually going on there, but I do know that there are certain expectations of things that need to get done. But, you know, there are people that cover it more closely. Our newsroom covers it more closely. They know better than I do, you know? I think it's fascinating. It's a good thing to know to have that self-awareness.
It's refreshing.
Because I know that there are things that, for example, a guy like Derek Gould will have a better grasp on than me. Because he's closer to certain things than I am. And I'm closer to certain things than other people. You know, it's just different.
Yeah.
But a pretty self-aware tweet, I thought.
I like it.
Rare on the internet.
Yes.
You know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean,
very refreshing.
Like, and we are all guilty of it. So it's, again, not about pointing out that other people do this. Everybody does it
of course.
Some point. The question is, at the end of it, are you aware that that's what you're doing?
Yes.
Because that changes it a little bit.
233 DGS on KMOX. If you're listening to 1120 in your car or at home on a radio, try tuning it in to 98.7 FM. If you're anywhere along Highway 4044 corridor between the rivers, it's going to be much better. The best thing you can do is download the Odyssey app, which allows you to, everything, podcast, stream, pause, rewind, send messages. So that's pretty cool. And if I can do it, obviously anyone can do it. Razor's Edge?
Yes. So I wanted to tell you guys about this college class that's being offered at Nottingham College. And it aims to help students feel less anxious when they're talking on the phone.
I was in the kitchen and I heard Annie talking about this with Ethan from her show. Fascinating.
It really is, because my first response to this was like, oh, give me a break. You can't talk on the phone. What's wrong with you? But then I sat with it for a second and I thought, well, a lot of these Gen Z kids probably just grew up never talking on the phone. They only texted. And you know what? If they have anxiety about it, who am I to judge? I have anxiety about a lot of really stupid stuff. So is this really that big of a deal?
Everyone but me knows how to tweet. I've never sent one in my life. I wouldn't know. Not only would I not know how to log on and do it, I wouldn't know how to phrase it. I would.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Like, yeah. I would be writing things in a form that people are like, what the hell is this going to do?
Right. No, this is a good point, Dave, that like every generation has its advantages and shortcomings compared to other generations, right? So an older generation, like, should we judge Gen Z for this and then not judge a boomer that doesn't understand social media? Well, why? Why should a boomer understand social media the way that a younger generation does? You never had to deal with it. And if you jumped on it, you jumped on it late to be on Facebook so you could see pictures of kids in the family and things like that. Like, I don't think that the expectation should be that every generation has the exact same skills as the ones that came before it, and the ones that came before don't have the same skills as the ones that came after. So it makes sense to say, all right, here's a hole in your training when you're young. Let's fill that hole and teach you how to do this thing.
Do we know what they teach them?
They just teach them like basic etiquette of how to be on the phone. And it's kind of like exposure therapy, I think. It's like just having more and more
practicing.
Conversations. Yeah. But I got to thinking, like, I wonder if the first people who adopted the telephone had anxiety about it.
Oh, yeah. Because, that had to be so weird.
Well, it's kind of like what you said about Twitter. Like, you just don't know that language. It would be weird to have this machine, this newfangled thing in your kitchen or wherever it was, and then it rings and you're like, yes, what's going on? I'm sure they had anxiety using it at first. So, I mean, it's not, you know, the exact same situation, but it had helped me have a little bit of compassion for these kids.
Mm-hmm.
But then I got to thinking, like, why? Okay, anxiety about phone calls. If we take it in another direction, it does seem like anxiety over something very minor. And I don't know if it's just we're more open about talking about anxiety these days, or if people genuinely do have more anxiety in 2025 than they did in the past. But why do you think so many people have anxiety? Is it a sign of the times? Are we just weaker now than we used to be? Or are we just more honest about our anxiety? Are we more coddled? Are we more like, oh, it's okay to have anxiety, so then people lean into it more?
I think everything you just said is true. I think every single one of those things are valid points, and I think it's the stew that you get when you throw all those ingredients in that leads us to the way society is now. I think all those things are exactly it. I mean, my dad was in the South Pacific when he was 17 years old. So when he came back after 4 years, going to work and having a family probably wasn't as daunting to him, having just been at war for 4 years, living on a ship. You know, I didn't have that experience.
So, yeah, I mean, but if you think about the natural course of things, like when, where was it? I was watching a TV show, and it was post-World War One, and they referred to the World War One veterans with PTSD, because that wasn't a thing, right? They called them shakers, because they were shaking, because they're anxious, they're nervous. And they almost did it in a mocking way, but it was a serious thing, right? I mean, it was shell shock. They had seen horrible things, but at that time period, it was not okay to be that way. And now it is. And this is why I always struggle with the phrasing that we'll see on news reports or on studies that say anxiety is up, because we can only measure anxiety based on reporting of it, based on what people say. Do I have this or do I not? We don't have a standard scientific measurement. Like, we can measure how much snow fell. We can measure what the temperature is over the course of a year and then over a course of 100 years. We don't have a standard where we can just scientifically measure everyone's level of anxiety. We can only go by what people say. And if for generations people just wouldn't say and now people will, how do we know it's actually more versus we're just admitting it and dealing with it as opposed to pretending it doesn't exist?
Mm-hmm.
It's very that it's I don't know what the real answer is, but I think that's the real conversation. So it, to me, the reports that we hear, to me, it's a good thing that people are more willing to talk about it, that it's not demonized the way
and
that it was.
What's really interesting to me, I am obviously, because I do it on the show every day, I'm obviously a big believer in opening up conversations about mental health and things like that. And really for the first generation to do it, you wonder a generation or two down the road, will what we're doing help anxiety subside, or will it just spiral?
It's interesting. Or is it just part of the nature of being a human?
And
it's
kind of
always, and it's kind of always going to be there, and we just try to work to mitigate the effects that it has. You know, because I see these, like, I see a story here, and it says anxiety increased 5.12% in 2008, from 2008 to 2010. Did it, or did the reporting of it increase 5.12%? Because we don't have a measure of what anxiety actually is, and we don't have, like, well, if your brain does this, or if we measure this current in your brain for this amount of time, this is anxiety. We don't have that. Nobody's doing brain scans to see that.
I know that the world felt less stressful when I was younger, and that could be 100% because I was younger.
Sure.
I was looking through 20-year-old eyes and not 60-year-old eyes, but the world does seem faster and more complicated. Do you feel that? Do you guys feel that way?
Well, I mean, practically, compared to 40 years ago, there are things you can see every day you would never have seen 40 years ago. You're presented with elements of life that 40 years ago none of us would have ever seen or heard about. Right? So the thing, like the fires in LA, that would be a distant story for us in the Midwest 40 years ago. You might see it on the ABC, NBC, CBS evening news for a half an hour, but you didn't have 24-hour news coverage. You wouldn't have been seeing nonstop video about it. You would have seen it as a headline in a newspaper, and you would have seen it on the evening network news, and that's it.
Yeah, I've had that thought before, like looking at X on my phone, and you're just inundated with so many opinions, and a lot of them are trash opinions. And then like videos of people fighting, and then like Wheel said, like the fires and all this horrible stuff happening. And that's just from scrolling. That's got to trigger something in your brain. I'm not saying it's social media's fault. I'm just saying, if there's more of a feeling of that now, I think, you know, these kids are just exposed to things that, I mean, even I wasn't exposed to. I had the internet, but it was on my family computer in the kitchen. I wasn't just, it wasn't in the palm of my hand all the time.
I think this is kind of an interesting question. Can you, if you choose, effectively live a 1990 life in 2025?
Some people do. Some people give up the smartphone and do like a flip phone.
You can get there, but it's going to take a lot of effort and probably take money.
What?
I mean, what about just like, can you be effective in your job living a 1990 lifestyle? Can you be effective in just, you know, can you do it?
Probably depends on your job, right?
Yeah, I don't think you can be effective in this job.
No, nope, not possible. Not possible at all. But again, when we think about it, like we see the terrible things that we see, right? We see the fires, we see terrorist attacks. We see them where 100 years ago, 50 years ago, whatever, you would not have seen them. You would have just heard about it, and it would have been a concept versus a visual. Think about I just watched the series on Netflix, Churchill at War, and it's all about Winston Churchill leading through World War II, like before World War II, all the way through it. So, like 85 million people died in World War II. But the world population then was 1/4 of what it is now. So that would be in that time frame, like now, multiply that by 4, like 300 million people dying. That would be like the entire United States dying. That's how big World War II was. That's how many people died during that relative to the population now, which is about roughly 4 to 5 times bigger. But we didn't see a lot of it, except in little glimpses here and there. Imagine that happening with social media, where you're seeing it all in real time. Because that's what happened in Gaza, right? We saw all of that in real time, and you're seeing it happen. And, well, in the United States, you didn't see that in World War II, except maybe on newsreels when you went to a movie theater. People had TVs. Oh, no, did anybody have TVs in their home in the 1940s? Probably not. No, because that wasn't until the 50s that that really became a thing. So, you know, it was the worst time ever. But we would think, a lot of people would think of those times as better than now, less stressful than now. But no way that it was less stressful than now. You know, if you lived in that time, you didn't know how the world was going to go.
Yeah, it's interesting because one of the questions I posed was like, are we more coddled now? And in some ways, we absolutely are. And I think I think sometimes when it comes to anxiety, and I can say this because I have lots of anxiety, like I think if too many concessions are made for that emotion, it can just become worse because it's like, all right, you do have to face it at some point. You have to be able to function, or you have to live with the consequences of avoiding those functions. So in some ways, we are more coddled. But yeah, you're right. In a lot of other ways, it's all laid bare in front of us. And we just kind of, there's no way to like suss that out. It's just like, hey, guys, here's what's going on. All right, bye.
Yeah.
Hope you had fun on the internet today.
Well, it's an interesting question, right? So which is more coddled? Telling someone that it's okay that you're dealing with anxiety and it's time to deal with it, or what the world kind of used to be where everyone was sheltered from it, where you weren't seeing those things and you weren't hearing about them in great detail.
A combination would be nice.
Right. Somewhere in the middle would be the best way, right? But we don't. So I always find that an interesting dilemma is when people say that kids are coddled today, in some ways, we hold back. Maybe we don't yell as much. You don't spank like people used to spank or whatever. But they're also not sheltered from the things that previous generations were sheltered from until they were probably 40, 50, 60 years old.
Yeah. Coming up at 3 p.m., we have Janelle to do some movie reviews. And then at 4 p.m., Matt Pauly joins us.
Good times with just a little bit more in focus.
249 DGS, Stairway to Kevin.
Yeah, let's do a quick one here. So this will relate to, in fact, I'm looking at the video now, which is funny timing. But obviously the memorial service for Jimmy Carter was happening today, and all of the current and former presidents are there.
Oh, man.
You got Trump sitting next to Barack Obama, and they're just talking and laughing and being normal human beings. George W. Bush walks up to the row. He's going in. Barack Obama stands up to greet him and then let him pass. And George gives him a little belly tap, like a little backhand smack.
I love George.
Yeah, just cute.
But they're being normal people. Why can't they be that all the time? Mm. Because we all get so wrapped up into this left versus right. Everybody hates each other. I mean, each one of those guys, the opponent said was the end of democracy, or they were the devil, or they were the Antichrist. Barack Obama's a terrorist, and he's not. And you know, Donald Trump's the end of democracy, and George Bush is a war criminal. Like all of these things are happening, but yet they're just being normal people together. Why? I think a lot
of
it.
Do it.
And I think a lot
Could
of it.
Could you guys
though,
do it?
Well, I think a lot of this is on them because if they can be this in these casual settings, they can be this in the real settings too. They can be this during election season. And if they were, it changes the vibe that we deal with. Because, and when we think about it, in real life, we know people of all different political persuasions, and we're all friends. We all get along. We all just belly tap each other, and we tell stories, and we laugh. But yet, when we do these things on the grander scale, it becomes a war. And we're pitted against each other like we're enemies. But they are not enemies of one another. Look at how they're acting. They're not acting like they hate each other. They're acting like they're buddies.
That's a different animal. Like, if I disagree politically with Mark Cox, but if I were to go on the air publicly and just crap on him all the time, and he's so stupid, and if he gets his way, it's the end of life is the way we know it, and just he's dangerous. If I ran into him at a Christmas party, I couldn't just like, hey, Mark, how you doing? Shake his hand, blah, blah, blah. Like, you got to pick a lane. Either you go, I can criticize. He can criticize me. We can cross swords in him many times. That's cool. But when you get personal with someone like these men have.
Yeah, I think.
What do you think, Rach? Should I say something?
Yeah.
I was just going to say, you mean like when you claim someone wasn't actually born in the United States or something like that?
Something like that.
You know who wasn't playing along was Karen Pence.
She did not.
She did not feel like making nice today. And I don't blame her, because if someone was okay with a crowd of people saying they wanted to hang my husband, I would probably not stand up and shake the guy's hand.
No, yeah, because but Mike Pence did.
Yeah, he did.
He stood up and shook Donald Trump's hand. And
Kamala.
Sorry, go ahead.
Kamala had to sit right in front of them, and she didn't seem too pleased about it either. In fact, there's a shot of her giving a dirty look back behind her when she heard like Obama and Trump yucking it up.
Oh, yeah, those two giggling about something.
Those are the two least likely guys to be yucking it up. Obama and Trump.
Obama has shown time and time again since he left office, he just don't care anymore. He's like, whatever happens from here is simply none of my business. And, you know, he's out, you know, water skiing and giving speeches for $100,000 a pop or whatever. So I think he just, I think he could not be less bothered when he has to sit next to Trump for something. I think he's just like, hey, what's up?
Yeah. And you know what it tells me?
Big T?
I don't know if you guys agree, but what it tells me is that none of these people believe any of the terrible things they say about their opponents.
Yeah, I'm sure.
They don't actually believe them. They say them because they want to rile us up, because that'll motivate people to go vote for them. But in the back rooms, they do not hate each other. They do not feel that the other one is actually, I don't know how, you know, the whole, I don't know how the Biden-Trump dynamic is. Maybe that's all too recent and all of that, or the Kamala-Trump thing is all too recent. But it seems very clear to me that none of these guys believe any of the things that they said based on how they act. When you're not thinking anybody's watching, right? They're not on the stage. They're not at a big event or a big rally. They're just getting seated in advance of this thing and being human beings. And yet, they have no problem firing the rest of us up to the point where we can't be that, and we don't see it that way. We see everybody as an existential threat to our way of life. Existential stench.
Sounds like Biden over here.
I know. What the hell, man? Might have to have someone take over the campaign for me.
Yeah, this is no longer Stairway to Kevin. Back to Razor's Edge.
Yeah, Razor, take over, Rach. You don't have much time left, though, so you better hurry.
We're asking you to step aside.
You know, no one elected me, but I'm fine taking over. I'm sure it'll all work out.
Well, you got a minute 50. Better win. Do we take it more seriously than the people that are actually playing the game?
I would hate to think that, but I think it's true.
Yeah.
I was thinking when I saw that video of Obama and Trump, like, Trump's people on Twitter especially, that's where I see most of this. And who knows, like, what's actually going on with the things people post on Twitter or X or whatever you want to call it.
And how many are even real people?
Exactly. But it's like, a lot of these people do believe that Obama is, like, the worst person who has ever lived and the reason why Trump had to come into office. So then to see them sitting there and having a cordial exchange, how do you justify that in your head? And how do you justify, you know, the opposite? Like, I mean, I was frankly quite happy whenever Trump came to the White House and he and Biden were able to get along the way they were. Like, I'm not going to lie and say
we deserve that.
But it's the kind of thing where it's like, but you're telling me that he's ending democracy. So why is this happening? Like, it doesn't match up.
And again, sports guy analogy, because that's the world I've lived in for my adult life. This is how fans get more worked up about rivalries than the players do.
Yeah, that's such a good
players point. All know each other. They all handshake and hug it out after the end of the game, and they know each other. You know, that's, fans are the ones fighting in the parking lot.
Yeah, she looks so right. She is all I need tonight. Every now and then I get down to the end of a day, I have to stop, ask myself, why I've done it. Just seems